What happens when five industry friends get together and talk about what they know best? The industry. The Radio Facts Radio Show is what happens. I'm Kevin Ross, the creator of the Radio Facts Radio Show, and I hope you enjoy this episode. If you have questions or comments, feel free to contact me, kevin@radiofacts.com.
We weren't going to take his call.
Why not have him on? I mean, is there an issue with somebody?
Everybody didn't agree to having him on. So.
Well, he is a veteran in the game. It's always good to hear from one, you know, every now and then.
Well, I wish I would have heard from you a little earlier. Then I could have made a better decision, but, you know. The way it stands right now, it's not happening. Hello, who's that?
It's Paul.
Okay, I told him that we decided. Yeah, I didn't say anything. I just said that everybody did not agree that should be on the show, so.
Oh, well, if you're going for the super old demo, that's cool. It is then the Black History Month.
You know, let me say, I've.
Y'all are wrong.
Now, what are you claiming?
I got a surprise for you. He is actually on the phone. Boy, everybody got so quiet, you can hear a pin drop. He's not on the phone.
I knew he wasn't on the phone.
Wow, that is a story, Kev.
And yeah, I never really had a lot of respect for him after that. I'm saying he is like the most silent PD I've ever come across in my life.
Oh, is he?
I think so, last I heard.
You're listening to the Radio Facts Radio Show, brought to you by RadioFacts.com, your online information station.
I actually let her talk me out of a great job. She talked me out of I had gotten hired at General Hospital to play a doctor, and I let her talk me out of it.
Was it a contract, or was it an under five?
It's a continuous role.
Oh, wow.
She was like, don't take that. You'll never be, you'll be typecast and you'll never be able to get out of that. I let her talk me out of it. Of course, I think Lisa's on the soap opera now, if I'm not mistaken.
She is. Are you there?
Yeah.
Are you there?
Wow.
So,
oh, my God.
There you have it. Watch who you surround.
That's like that Hollywood shuffle thing.
Watch who you surround yourself with. Okay,
that's
so
right.
Let's get started.
Anyway, Kevin, you're not. I used to hear that you were Frankie Ross's little brother.
You're joking, right?
No, for real.
No, I never heard that one. Just I know that there are like three other Kevin Rosses in the industry, but no, I'm not. I'm no relation to Frankie.
Ken Wilson always says that. He'd be like, "Which Kevin Ross?"
Paul, let's start with you and talk about the response that you got from the story. Now, the story was posted originally just a few days before it exploded.
Really, it was posted about 3 weeks before the Grammys,
mm-hmm.
But it caught a buzz right during the Grammys.
I wanted to touch on something real quick that actually happened between me and Paul, and I wanted to share it. One of my writers ran the whole piece, and me and Paul kind of had this back and forth online about, you know, how that wasn't correct journalism. He was absolutely right. I wasn't aware that the whole piece was run, the whole letter, and in fairness, it should have been linked back to his site. But since that time, I've seen it where other people have run the whole letter. And then
I've seen it too.
Right. And then I thought about how, you know, I've kind of gotten when people in the industry do that to me, other trades or so-called trades totally steal my stuff. I mean, they even take my pictures that I crop. So I know they took it. And all the text and everything else. I never say anything because I just figure, you know, if they're not going to be creative, that's up to them. But it kind of drove a point home is that we do need to respect content that we see on a site. And we need to give credit to the correct people. So I made sure that when I rewrote the story, I not only gave credit to Paul, but I also gave credit to Sebastian. And I gave a link back to a site. So for everybody listening, if you ever copy anything from or if you copy any phrases from a story on a website, make sure that you give credit and don't post the whole thing. in all fairness, link it back to the...
Yeah, there is a digital rule on that. It is copyright infringement. I forgot what year the digital law came out, but, you know, I know there's a bunch of Kevin Flemings out there that just gangster stuff, and I understand that, but it's nice to be respectful, and don't edit that out, because Kevin never responded.
Okay.
And I know he read my message.
So, let's talk. Get back to the letter itself. Why is it that these letters come along every now and then everybody responds? I was shocked that Reggie Rouse actually responded.
Well, I think Reggie responded because Billboard called.
Oh, okay.
Everybody wants to be in Billboard. I don't think he was going to go on the record if I called him up.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Gail Mitchell has that type of juice where she can talk to people and get some answers. But, you know, we really didn't get solutions out of it. We just get to talk about it. And most of the time, folks are scared to talk about it. I got an internal email from the second in command that sent it out to his entire staff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Gail Mitchell told me that people were talking about it, just like her boss, Joe, the editor, said. He's hearing from people in other countries asking what the problem is. You know, so it's great that the letter has brought up some avid discussions, but I'm more concerned about getting results. It's nice getting the notice at raprehab.com, but it's even better to get the results and figure out why black music, R&B, and so many other art forms are suffering.
You know, that's what we talked about offline a minute ago, and I absolutely agree with that. I think that if we don't have solutions, we can complain and moan and groan all day long, but if we don't offer solutions to the problems, then it's useless. And I want to ask some of the other team members. Go ahead.
We're part of the problem if we don't come with solutions. Absolutely.
Right. So if we don't have a solution, we already know the complaints. We already know what the problems are. What are some of the solutions to this situation?
One could start with Billboard changing their criteria. It's sort of weird, you know, where a record could go number one urban and not be played on any urban radio station. That alone, this is baffling. Don't you think that's questionable? And I had that discussion with some folks at Billboard, and they're not really aware. And I think the real myth is when you see now Pharrell's Happy, this one number one, I forgot, like, there's three black songs in the Hot 100 by black artists, and nobody really knows how the whole formula is set up except Billboard.
Right.
They just could have said, after they read that article, okay, it's time for some Negroes to go number one. It's been a long drought.
Hmm.
You know, it's a mixture of social media, airplay, and some other things, but, well, how's Macklemore go number one on urban radio for I forgot how many weeks, and not one urban station ever played the record, or they played it, you know, 500 times in total.
Hmm. So you think that Billboard pretty much makes up their own rules?
Well, they change the rules, and mm-hmm. nobody knows what the rules are.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And they're the Bible.
What about
Billboard equals Bible?
What about PPM? Well, ultimately, they're the oldest publication. I don't know if you guys know this. They're like the oldest publication in the United States. Billboard.
Really?
Yeah. Like the oldest publication.
Okay.
Wow. So what is the...
We're going to say PPM.
Yes, exactly. What about... Very good. Does PPM play a part in this? I mean, isn't in this day, this digital day and age, isn't PPM still too limited?
PPM, the whole theory is extremely limited because you're basically taking, you know, a market and you're basically making up the market with a panel of people to represent your entire market. Mm. Let's say you have 100,000 people in a market, your PPM panel may be 20, maybe 30.
Right.
You know, and it's supposed to represent the entire market. So that is as limited as you can actually get.
Yeah, it's a sample population.
So what's the difference with diaries, with the mail diaries, you know, when they used to mail out diaries?
Mm-hmm.
They did more of those,
didn't they? There were definitely much more diaries, but you also were graded on different things. You were graded on perception of Do you, is this your favorite, I mean, you know, is this your favorite radio station? Do you listen to the station? And you can write it in because you think you listen to them as much as you, you know, are writing that you do, but you actually don't. With TPM, it's actually intentional listening. So, of course, you can't say, oh, V103 is my favorite radio station because I listen to them in the morning and at night. No, if you walk in a restaurant and you stay there 2 hours, you're graded, that's what you listen to. If you, you know, go to work and you happen to, your neighbor has on a country station and your people meter picks that up for 8 hours, that's what you actually did listen to. So it's more intentional listening than incidental.
So then then if Billboard's making up their own rules, so basically what's happening with the industry is everybody's becoming their own industry. So the charts, the music, radio, retail, of course, is no longer exists, so everything's online. So everybody's becoming their own industry, and we're not working in conjunction with each other anymore. Could that be the problem?
I don't think they've ever worked in conjunction with each other, to be honest. And I think each entity probably has its own incentive to do what they do,
mm-hmm.
for lack of a better word, you know, better term.
So then you will all say that Billboard is ultimately responsible, because of the way they do their charts for black artists, for the letter, basically, that the letter would be more directed at Billboard than anybody else.
Oh yeah, the whole point of the letter was that nobody made the Hot 100 a number one position in the, you know, since 1955, no black artist was a lead on a single that topped the Hot 100, and you know, you can remember years ago when 8 out of 10 records were black artists on the Hot 100. So yeah, it's a big change. It's a culmination of social media and everything else, but they changed the criteria, and the criteria has hurt urban artists. And if you can't chart high, the dollars don't go with you, and the extra push, and so on and so forth. So you know, it's always a mystery, but I think the record labels play a role in it too. When Beyonce had Love on Top was number one a couple of years ago, it went number one urban and never crossed pop. And she was the biggest artist on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So who picks to say what's going to go rhythmic at top 40? So Billboard doesn't pick it. So, you know, it's a little, everybody's in the mix here. So there are a lot of folks that have to answer, but you never get those people on conversations about theory and why they do certain things.
I actually, when I rewrote the piece, I thought that the letter went even, I took it to a deeper level, because I thought that, you know, we play a part in it too. It's not just Billboard. But when you look at, for example, the Dr. Dre situation where he gave the money to USC, and a couple of the black colleges were complaining that he should have given that money to them. I'm kind of split. I'm on the fence on that one, because I have friends who work for black colleges, and this may not be the most politically correct thing to say, but you know, who cares? I've been told that the funds are often misappropriated when they go to black colleges.
I bet they're misappropriated at white colleges too.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I'm talking about people who actually work in the system, so I don't know what's going on with
the
white collar.
Yeah, but the kings of white collar crime are white folks.
Right.
You know, we do the gangster crimes, but those big dollars, when you see that come out of government and the big scandals and the multi-million dollar crimes, you know, let's be honest, everybody commits crime.
Plus, he did that deal in conjunction with Jimmy Iovine, and I hardly doubt Jimmy Iovine is trying to get Howard University or Norfolk State or any other
Morehouse.
Property of that nature, any kind of
right.
Or Morehouse, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're listening to the Radio Facts Radio Show, brought to you by RadioFacts.com, your online information station.
So, but then I heard it was also Jimmy Iovine's idea to come up with the whole headphone concept in the first place. I heard that originally Dr. Dre he didn't want it.
Oh, I'm sure it was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it was. But isn't USC giving in, like how Clive Davis has that school of music over at NYU? Isn't USC doing the same thing for Jimmy and Dr. Dre?
I think they are giving him like a wing or something, or they're dedicating a wing
to. Kind of like the deal that Clive Davis has with NYU. So perhaps maybe, you know, Black College wasn't willing to give him that. You know, we don't know.
Yeah, Black College would have gave them a campus. Please.
Well, that's kind of my point. It's like, what do we kind of play a part in all this too? Because we have this, the people who are the power brokers in the industry. It's like, are they really? I mean, even with the Jay-Z thing fighting with Barney's, you know, and then they ended up, you know, kind of making him look crazy in the end anyway because they canceled his event. It's like, I mean, why aren't we giving back to the community?
Because we always get selective amnesia as wealth sets in. You know, Jay-Z can rap about Marcy Projects and drug dealing for the rest of his years. And yes, he probably does some great philanthropy, but, you know, we never hear that side of him. We always hear, you know, the big money thing. And it's about crossing over. Once you reach a certain point, how many artists that, you know, how many Frankie Beverly's are there that, you know, for 25 years stay in an urban setting and don't go pop? Going pop calls for something else. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember the times when I used to see Pitbull in white tees and shirts. Now Pitbull's sipping Pepsi. You know, and I'm not saying he doesn't do things in his community, but you have to have another image when you sign on that next level.
You're listening to the Radio Facts Radio Show, brought to you by RadioFacts.com, your online information station.
Well, I think he changed.
You know, and it's funny that you should say that, because I was going to say before while we were still talking about the letter to the Black community, and what I see in that letter, just going back to that real briefly, is I think that the reason that, you know, they've been able to, I'm not going to say take because that's a bad word, but kind of benefit from our culture, our music, our art, our film, all of that, is because of the business that we don't do. We do some good business, but I think that there's a lot of business that we don't do that also contributes to the Billboard problem and, you know, the whole premise of the letter. So.
And Black folks will always defend people that make money. You know, when Bob Johnson sold BET for whatever, $2 billion, $3 billion, whatever it was, he wasn't even on the board of directors at Viacom, and he owned the most stock. So that's sort of shocking, but we don't talk about these things. Or when we do talk about the things, we always get bashed from our own business, you know, on a certain level. And you know, me and Dwayne talk about this all the time, how business never gets completed, and if you talk about somebody, you know, a person of color, then somebody else will say you're trying to drag him down and you're a crab on the wall and all this other stuff. But we don't reinvest in ourselves, you know. Why is Russell Simmons start Def Jam and, you know, Rick Rubin is doing Adele now? You know, is it that he doesn't want to be in the industry? How come 50 can't get a record out, and now he's so-called independent? You know, and he's worth a ton of money.
I thought he just did a deal, just like this last week. I think he did something with a major.
Yeah, but I mean, he left Baby Aftermath after all these years that he couldn't get a deal, mm-hmm. and signed a distribution deal with Capitol so he can get a record out.
Right. Well, you know what? When you really think, I don't know how many of you grew up poor. I know I did. We grew up poor. We were on welfare. You got food stamps and all other stuff. I'm going to tell you right now, I never want to go back to that. So if I was in a situation where, you know, I could make some money and move forward, I get that. I get that. It's like, because even visiting, you know, it's a downer. And I mean, and there are people out there who don't want to see you be successful, so I would avoid it.
Yeah, but I think your point is, how come we don't reinvest in each other?
Yeah.
How come we don't own a label, or how come we don't own a film company, or how come, you know, Dre and Jay can't get together and say they're going to make their own Rock Nation?
Do you think it could be that it's the same situation at that level that it is at any level, like you just mentioned a minute ago? When it comes to black folks, we just don't trust each other and we don't want to work with each other?
Yep, I do.
Because I would think that with Dr. Dre's power right now, his name being on those headphones, there's no question, is what sold those headphones. So
right.
He definitely could start his own business, you know, or team up. Maybe he doesn't want to do it. Team up with somebody else. And definitely, I was thinking, instead of giving the money to a school, why not start a school? And somebody told me, they were like, well, that takes too much time and effort. I was like, but you got millions and millions of dollars. You can't hire people to do that? To start the Dr. Dre school?
Okay, let me just chime in a little bit. I've worked with Dre. Dre has actually supported a couple of community events that I've done. Last I dealt with them, which was a few years ago, they were working on something for the Compton School District.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's come into fruition or if it's still something in the works, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But there could be, you know, certain projects that are in development, maybe as a result of the backlash he got from the USC thing or whatever. But I think a lot of times, and this is really probably a poor excuse, is some of these artists don't know where to give or how to give or how to, you know, make a big difference, I think. Because there are so many organizations and people asking for money, but again, that could be a poor excuse. I don't know.
I was going to say that probably has a lot to do with their dealings with family and friends on the way up. You know, you get burnt.
I'm sure.
You know,
I'm
so sure. Many times.
Right.
But it kind of goes back to what you guys kind of said a little bit about the black colleges. From my experience working in L.A. and working with nonprofits and gang intervention organizations like that, a lot of the organizations aren't ready or aren't well-versed, because it's like running a business, and a lot of the people running the organizations, I'll say some of the people running the organizations don't have that kind of background to run a nonprofit properly at times.
Mm-hmm.
So,
here's an example in the music game. How come 50, who has more than enough money, couldn't deliver his record? Do you think if 50 did an independent record, delivered it to 200 urban stations in the country, it was a hit record, but he wasn't associated to a major, do you think programmers would stand up and put it in rotation and he could profit from a record like that?
No.
Of course not.
Mm-mm.
Crickets.
And then he's been out of the loop for a minute.
But I mean, if it was a hit record, I mean, nobody can walk into a radio station, an independent like the Macklemore Story, and get success in a market the way the system's set up. It could be the new Michael Jackson could walk in, but nobody would play it. Because
mm-hmm.
there's everybody's program.
I wouldn't go as far to say nobody, because you do have a few, very few,
the name
that
of who?
That know how to pick hit records and will take a chance and start a trend. But at the end of the day, yes,
okay.
For the most part, there is a system that you have to play into. What I was going to say right after Poetry spoke was, in terms of the why we don't necessarily reinvest into our own and we don't do this and we don't do that, I've never thought that I would be one to say this in all of my years, but I have actually seen it with my own eyes. Unfortunately for many of us, and it's the unfortunate truth, sometimes we seem to think that the white ice cubes are always colder. And I've seen it, and some people run their businesses that way, and I'm not going to start naming them, but just as an example, there are a lot of radio stations who will hire white sales reps to sell black radio.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because I was told that, okay, well, they can walk in the door and get the dollars that we can't. Okay, well, how about training the black sales rep to be able to go in there and know how to secure that deal? Why don't you, Mr. Sales Manager, go in there with them and teach them how to secure those dollars?
But you know, I don't know, Jamil, on the other side of that, I kind of can see where the company's coming from, too. It's like, if I send somebody and you're not even going to give them the time of day, And I guess
I get that.
Yeah.
I get that. Right. I get that. But that's just one example. We also have some companies that have white people running black music, you know, whether it be radio, whether it be records, whatever the case may be. My whole point is, if we're going to uplift the community, if we're going to train, if we're going to hold each other up, if we're going to keep it circulating in our community, then that's not how you do that. And unfortunately, before people even think about that, they have that mentality. Oh, yeah, white is right, or the white ice cubes are always colder. And again, I hate to even say things like that, but that's actually the unfortunate truth. It's the truth, and we show it in our actions. It's not just what we say, but so when it is time to, you know, when we do generate great wealth, then guess what? We're so far removed from our own community, we just throw them a few little ducats, and then we go and we partner with somebody else, and all that is it's regenerating more wealth in another community.
Well, we feel like we've made it. We feel like we have been accepted at that
exactly.
point. Yeah.
That we've arrived, yeah.
And so we don't want to go back, And when you consider, okay, you take an artist, like I've talked to people at the record labels who tell me a lot of times the artists will come in and they'll bring, you know, Lil Man as the manager and Shaquita, you know, as the finance person. And they bring their own family and everything is just crazy. They feel an obligation to support the people who might support them today, but eventually turn against them. And then they get a bad taste in their mouth. And then they don't want to deal with all black people. You know, because if you can't trust your family, who can you trust? So,
well, in some regards, you can't trust your family. But that goes back to the earlier point of how we do business or how we don't do business. Mm-hmm. You got to know when to bring them and when to leave them at home. You got to know when to hire them and have them on your team and riding on your tour bus, and you got to know when to leave them at home. So it's about business. Now, if you got to go somewhere and learn how to get the business done by people that don't look like you, I'm not mad at that at all. But if you say that, you know, you're going to be a part of the community, or you know, it's all about redistribution of wealth, and it comes with knowing that. And if we're ignorant to that, then we can't do that. You know what I mean?
But I think that that's their intention. Excuse me. Initially, I think that is a black artist's intention. That's why he brings his family along. But because he's never done a business with his family, or he's never done business, or, you know, none of them have training in doing business.
Or the family's never done business.
Right. He thinks that he can get something accomplished by having people around him he can trust. If I was a 18-year-old rapper, I would bring my family along versus, you know, somebody, you know, dressed in a suit from the label that I don't know and I don't trust. You know, I would want people around me that I feel comfortable around. But unfortunately, like I said, as you go through the process and then your family starts to screw you and turn against you and sell you out, then, you know, you become, you know, you have a lack of trust for all black people. And I think that is where a lot of these artists end up only working with, you know, other communities.
I mean, I've seen it from a label perspective where artists have had, in the beginning when they first started out, they've had the family, they've had, you know, the brothers in the corner managing them and so forth. And then once they had success, maybe once they went platinum, I've seen the labels really pretty much totally oust those managers. They pretty much say, oh, this is going to be your manager this on your next record. And I've seen them actually really stronghold them and pretty much really, you know, make them make that transition and make them get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and at that point, they're protecting their investment, and I get it.
Exactly.
I get it.
Exactly.
But what you were saying, Captain, in terms of, you know, after they've had family and friends around and they've messed up and they want to go the other route, you got to take responsibility of your part in that, too. You are the one who were ignorant enough to think that Pookie could handle it when you knew good and well that he's never done that before.
And, you know, there's one artist I will not mention. It's a female who whose mother... Please nobody mention the name, but whose mother was managing her career, and she literally destroyed. I knew Paul was going to say that. She literally destroyed it.
Okay.
And the reason why I said don't say it is because I like her. I mean, say she. We email each other, we have conversation, and she seems cool. But you know, the whole thing in a nutshell is that people told, and even Brandy said this, is that people told her, "I don't want to work with you because of your mother." I was in an office at one of her other labels, and her mother called. And it was like the whole office was just, I mean, the mood totally changed. It's like, oh, God, here she is. Let's, you know, let's take this call. And I mean, they put me out of the meeting, and it was like everybody came in. They had to do a conference call because they were like, she's getting ready to go off.
Again, we've got to look at ourselves and say, okay, it's great to have someone there that you trust, but is that the best person qualified to handle your business?
Right.
Yeah, but I think it's bigger than that. We have to learn how to do business. You know, me and Dwayne were talking about that old Damon Dash video at Def Jam when he's cursing at Kevin Lyles and whole team talking to his heart. Yeah. That's why Damon Dash is broken out in the business. Because people of other colors, they have losers for 20 years and they got great jobs. Mm-hmm. But sometimes when you're not that nice guy, you're not that player that makes, you know, 18 years in the NBA because you're not a good citizen. You know, and you're giving people hell, so once they get you, they can step on your neck.
Yeah, that video definitely was not a great marketing
not at all.
Piece of work.
Yeah.
So what getting back on the part about the music. So let's say that what is it that Billboard can do? Since allegedly, you know, we're saying that they control the charts. What is it that they can do to make it more, well, I don't know what, fair or?
You know what? I bet you nobody on this phone call can name three black people that work at Billboard.
No.
You know, and I'm not saying it's only just having black folks in the mix or at the table, but if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And that always happens. If there's nobody to speak up, and I don't blame them, but, you know, that sometimes that happens, you know. And it might not be on purpose, but, you know, it's like lobbying on Capitol Hill. You got to have people in the system. And as big and as, you know, Kevin said, the 101-year history, I don't know. You know, I can tell you the few people I've ever known work at Billboard.
Well, then,
and most of the blacks that worked there, that was many years ago. You know, when you look at Janine McAdams and your Michael Nixons and your Terry Rossies and all of them, that was many years ago.
Right. Well, and then I look at it another way. How come we don't have our own Billboard?
We did.
What was that?
BRE. We see a lot of things that come and go, but we don't support them because, you know, we don't have award shows. You know, I was at BET when we did an award show in the studio, and, you know, nobody watched it. And now you see the BET Awards and the BET Honors. They're not even produced by staffers, you know. Cosette and Company and everybody else, you're like, who are all these people working?
But then, you know what? Look at
that's probably a question you can answer. With you being the owner and operator of a music trade magazine, that's probably a question you can answer.
You know what? I tell you, if I did stuff like other trades did, like I worked for Urban Network, I worked for R&R. If I did stuff like other trades did, I'd be a lot richer. But my whole thing was, is that I started my trade publication because I didn't want to be like them. You know, I didn't want to kiss ass. I didn't want to manipulate charts. I didn't want to, you know, I've seen all that stuff. So, and then people have asked me for years, when are you going to do a conference? I'm like, I would cuss somebody out, you know, dealing with the egos and all that other shit that comes with that. I've seen how that works. So, that, you know, as far as a chart is concerned, it's like, I'm not into the whole manipulation, game playing. I'm not into that. So that's why I never did it. But I've seen...
Look, the reason why I did RapRehab.com, and I'll never have label support or never have industry to support, is because I wanted to be free of to say what I want and do what I want. So it's great when Billboard picks up a story, but I'll talk about Billboard. I'll talk about whoever's doing right and wrong. So sometimes we got to take ownership and take a smaller piece of the pie. So that, I agree with you, Kevin. It always can't be, you know, I'm not going to do fan news. I'm not going to do who's screwing who and whose baby's mama, because I don't think that's important.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and then from my perspective, I was going to say, I have nothing against the labels. You know, the labels are they're the ones who support me. I don't get any money from radio, nothing, very little. So my issue has always been with radio, because that's my career, radio. So it's similar to what you're saying, Paul, but I haven't had issues with the labels, so that's why I do get advertising from them. But radio has, I mean, for me working for, you know, starting out in 85 and working for the mom and pop stations back then all the way through, the stuff that I've seen, I mean, I knew that I could create the content that could talk about that forever. And I still see. And speaking of which, when I sent out this email blast and I was saying I wanted people to be a part of this show, I'm really burnt out. I think from this point on, when we do this show, I'd rather get people outside of radio. I can't do the whole political radio thing anymore. Everybody is so scared to say shit. I mean, they won't talk. They're scared to respond. They're scared to even hit a like button because they think that somebody may see it. I can't do that. So from this point on, they can listen all day, and I have a dedication to radio, but I'm not asking radio for nothing else from this point on.
How would radio want to advertise with you? I mean, they're their own advertisers, aren't they? I mean, they have their own website. They have their own following. So why would they, I mean, this is just out of curiosity. Mm-hmm. Why would they advertise with you?
Who's saying that radio, I'm confused. I'm confused about your question.
You said that they don't.
No, I'm making a point.
I radio should they should advertise with Kevin for their concerts and their festivals and everything else. He's talking to radio people. Do you think they would advertise with them? Maybe, but maybe not.
Well, I don't know. I think radio in itself is its own vehicle. I don't think they need me for that. Go ahead, Jamila.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. No, I was just going to say they might not need to advertise, but I'm sure radio companies, as we all know them, do donate or support who they want to support, even if it's not relevant to any listener on the air.
Of course. Now, what I'm saying is, I'm not saying that I want support from radio, Poetess. I'm saying that all of my income, or majority of it, I do get some support from radio corporations, but a majority of my support comes from the labels who are, you know, directing their product to program directors. So I'm talking to radio. I don't expect anything from radio. I'm saying that, therefore, that's when Paul was saying that he has the autonomy to say whatever he wants. I'm saying that I have the autonomy to say whatever I want towards radio, because I don't make money from radio. And I don't have, my dedication is only because it's my career. But I'm saying I have nothing against the labels, so I don't necessarily have to talk about them. You see what I'm saying?
Well, I think BET and Kathy Hughes and Alfred Liggins should be on Rap Rehab. I think they should.
Why?
Because I'm reaching their audience. So when I do the story about black ownership and white leadership, they should take out an ad and show the black people that they have working in the office, or the jocks working for $10 an hour.
I would love to see an interview with you. I would love to have Alfred Liggins. But I'm like you, Paul. It's like, I know that I would not get a return call from him.
Look, I talked to Alfred Liggins a couple of years ago when we were doing the performance royalty stuff. I was going to be on Capitol Hill, and Alfred was supposed to be the counterpoint person. I was there with Sound Exchange. Alfred called me up. We had the longest discussion forever, and he knew I was coming, and Alfred didn't show up.
Well, do you remember that video that was online where he was he made an appearance somewhere and these two young girls went off on him?
Yeah, I have that on raprehab.com, yeah.
Okay. So, and he was trying to explain why the station played the kind of music that they played. And I have to say that a lot of times I do see both sides. I try to understand both sides of an equation. And I understood where he was coming from and I understood where they were coming from. They don't understand how corporations work. I don't know Alfred. I've never talked to him. I've talked to Kathy. I've been in the same room. I've had conversations with her. But Alfred doesn't know me. And I don't think that if I picked up a phone and I called him that he would take my call. I don't think L.A. Reid would take my call. You know, and I've been in the industry for, almost 30 years. But I think it's like you said in the beginning, if Gail Mitchell called, he would take it. So it is a association.
6 degrees of separation.
Right. But I tell you the funny thing. Trade publications, I know at least mine, because I don't think there are many besides me and Paul that are really respected. Me and Paul and who else on the black side? I think that's it.
I'm not a trade publication.
Okay, well, I'm saying, but you are industry based. Would you say that? Okay.
Frequency Code?
Who?
Frequency.
Who's that?
Oh, never mind. Okay, go ahead.
I never heard of it either.
Yeah, I never heard of the Frequency.
You mean the Radio 1 publication Frequency?
Yes.
Who's that?
Oh, that's Radio 1's.
Yes.
Oh.
Okay, but go ahead. Finish your point.
You know what? I will say that magazine is very well laid out. I like the way it looks. Anyway, okay. You know, it's like the funny thing about trade publications, even with program directors, is that I find out, I hear stuff before, you know how the industry works. If somebody's about to get fired, right. Trade magazines are the first people who know about it. It's like, I know people are going to get fired weeks in advance. And so I'm like, you know, you really would want to be friendly or find a way to have a conversation with people who could. And I've actually helped a couple of people. I told them, you know, this is about to happen. You need to do this, do that. And they were very grateful afterwards. But these are people I talk to on a regular basis. So being in this position, you do know pretty much everything. But it has its other factors. I mean, you get burnt out because radio's not talking, so you don't, unless you have some really good contacts, you don't really get a lot of news. I mean, somebody getting fired is huge news today. Somebody dying. I mean, that's like always number one on Radio Facts. You know, somebody.
Or a statement after they got fired.
Yeah. Yes, it's like, I remember, like, you know, some years ago, that was so common. People got fired, PDs were fired, you know. It was always happening, but now it's like everybody, that's major news, and that's boring. Mm-hmm. Did you guys get a chance to review the KFC commercial?
I thought it was a good commercial. I didn't find it offensive at all.
So,
I'm trying to find out what was racist about it.
Me neither. I didn't find anything offensive. I just think that fried chicken and black people is just a sensitive topic. You know, I'm sure if we all on this call talked about how much we love fried chicken, it wouldn't be a problem. But if one white person got on the phone and said, "I know you all love fried chicken," we'd be offended by that.
Well,
it's like the N word. It's like, you know, who says it? Who are they saying it? It makes it sensitive. You know.
Well, you know what?
I just want the chicken fries. Brought people together.
Well, here, for the people who don't know about the commercial, there's a little black girl and her mother who apparently are transplants to Japan, and it looks like they're trying to acclimate themselves, and the little girl's very lost, and she goes to a school, she's the only black girl, and then this little Japanese girl comes up to her, and she's smacking her fingers, licking her fingers, and which is the part that I thought was interesting, because is it like that's how I communicate? It's like, oh, you I know you like finger licking good chicken. And then the black girl lights up and they go and they eat chicken and then they're friends. And
I can see that part being kind of funny.
But first the black girl is eating with chopsticks and she knows how to use them. She's not lost eating with the chopsticks. Like, she knows how, so it's kind of like, it's exposing you first to one culture. The girl is experimenting, learning one culture. She knows how to eat with the chopsticks. She doesn't look lost with the chopsticks. So Now she's coming back to something, but now she's coming back to something that she's more familiar with.
Yeah, but she's gobbling that chicken down, though. I mean, I didn't even see the part with the chopsticks. I just saw her.
You can't gobble that whole chopstick.
She looked really at home with that fried chicken. And it was like the whole situation was that they could be friends now, that they got her, they took her to a place to get some fried chicken, that now they had something in common and they could be friends.
No, I think she was homesick. And to be in an American restaurant or somewhere that's something she could relate to that probably was in her neighborhood or whatever, I just felt like that was a nice gesture, like, you know, this is American food. It could have been any restaurant, McDonald's, Burger King, whatever.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But, so I don't think it had anything to do with the chicken per se, but I didn't take it as that. I took it as her maybe being home sick. She was doing all the Asian culture stuff, and they took her to something she could probably relate to. So that's hot.
But the fried chicken is what she can relate to. And then my whole thing is that
you didn't let that go. That's
if it was a McDonald's commercial, it wouldn't have been racist. But I think my only issue.
Why? When McDonald's, I won't go into all that.
Because you know, you didn't see old characters of black Sambos eating a quarter pounder. But what I'm saying is that. The only thing that made the connection to me, the only problem I have is a little girl smacking her fingers. Like, I know you can't talk, but I know you can understand this sign language.
But you know, that's really how you do eat fried chicken. You do know you don't eat it with a fork, right?
Right.
But how many people, Jamila, come up to you and ask if you want to eat something with, and they're smacking their fingers? Instead of saying, let's just go to
that
some...
That lets me know that it's about to be good.
Yeah, but all races of people do the same thing when they eat fried chicken. We are the only people that lick our fingers when we eat fried chicken. We all do that. Black fried chicken, whatever.
Seeing finger licking good, wasn't that their motto?
That's their slogan, yes. Exactly.
I don't know. Paul, you don't have anything to say about that?
Chicken, man.
You're listening to the Radio Facts Radio Show, brought to you by RadioFacts.com, your online information station.